WTOP goes in depth on the issues that affect you. It's Ask the Governor with Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell.
I'm not expecting that. I've got 3 years. I'm not campaigning for it. I'm running solely to be governor of Virginia.
You're not ruling it out.
I'm not looking for it.
Live from the Glass and Close Nerve Center, your hosts Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
And to be a part of the program today with Governor McDonnell, you can call us toll-free at 877-336-1035. The number again is 877-336-1035. Email questions at WTOP.com. We're also taking questions on WTOP's Facebook page or on Twitter using the hashtag AskTheGov.
Hey, Governor, I'm sorry, I was daydreaming.
Would you like me to ask the questions this morning, Mark? You can give the answers.
No, because Notre Dame lost last time.
All right.
We were talking about the lacrosse championship, and congratulations to Loyola of Maryland for winning the national lacrosse championship, beating Maryland and Notre Dame.
And Notre Dame in the same weekend.
Governor, let's talk about Metro. We've gotten a lot of calls about Metro. There's a lot to talk about today, but WTOP recently is releasing a poll today on people in the region and their desire for the extension of the Silver Line. And in Virginia, 83% of those polled support it. They want that extension. What do you say to those people? What is the prospect of that? What's holding it up? Where do we stand right now?
Well, I'm supporting it. I think the project's been in the formative stages now for several years. I think that getting that Silver Line extended to Dulles is necessary. It's the right thing to do. On the other hand, it's a very expensive and complicated project. And I've been concerned, as you know, for several years about making sure this project is properly managed, that it is done in a transparent, fiscally responsible way, and that this project that's costing about $250 million a mile is done well. There's obviously been some concerns that we've raised with the memoirs management with regard to future tolls for our Virginia taxpayers, and frankly, those of all over the region, the underground tunnel, the union preference for the Phase 2 contract, some other issues that were just raised by the Inspector General's report that was released a couple of weeks ago that was, as you know, was fairly harsh about the recent management decisions. So it's going to get built, I believe. I'm supporting it being built. We've already dedicated $150 million of state taxpayer money. But now we need to see some, management changes. I've addressed very clearly with both MWA and the U.S. Secretary of Transportation some things that Virginia wants to work with to get done so that we can move forward with this important project.
When you
project.
Talk about management changes, you're talking about your board members being seated?
Well, that's one. Absolutely. I mean, President Obama signed a bill that Frank Wolf introduced last November that basically said that there, among other things, that there were two members of the board that will be added from Virginia. I appointed them in December and was still refused to seat those members, one also from D.C. and Maryland. And without getting into some of the legal issues that they have raised, it's just one more thing that has concerned me about the ability of the MWA, current MWA board, to properly reflect the priorities of Virginia.
So when you say management, are you talking about the management of Metro or the management of this construction project?
I'm talking about the management of Phase 2 that is within the purview of the board of MWA. That is my primary concern. I've laid it out in great detail for them, and we're working together. They've got a new executive director who I believe is a top flight guy. We've got two new board members now, Tom Davis and Todd Stottlemyre from Virginia, that are top business people that will help. But I need to have the rest of our members seated, and then several of the other things outlined in the IG report, elimination of this union preference for the Phase 2 contract that'll ratchet up the price of the deal. All these things are just need to be done so that we can keep the tolls low on the future users, because the tolls are what's paying the bulk of the construction for Phase 2.
Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell is here taking your calls for the next hour. When we come back, we'll talk about tolls in Virginia. Now look for traffic and weather on the 8th.
It's Ask the Governor with Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell. Back to your hosts, Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
Your chance to talk to the governor is now. Call us at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Email your questions at WTOP.com or send in on Twitter. Use the hashtag AskTheGov.
Governor, we were just talking about whether or not you're going to go to the Notre Dame-Navy game in Dublin. You're not going to. It's the first game of the season, but it's after the Republican convention.
Yeah,
bad timing.
Day and a half after it finishes. So now I can't go as much as I'd love to go back to the homeland of my ancestors.
Let's stay in this homeland and the tolls that you were talking about.
Yes.
Trying to keep the tolls down. You've really been unhappy with the way MWA has been treating Virginia, and you're really concerned about the final cost of this extension to the Virginia taxpayers and to commuters as far as the tolls go. But you said on the air, and you reiterated a commercial, you're committed to getting this done one way or another, correct?
Absolutely. I directed Secretary Connaughton to work with Secretary LaHood and the other stakeholders from Fairfax and Loudoun to find a way to get this project back on track. And over the last year, Mark, I think the good news for the citizens of the region is that the cost now has gone from $3.8 billion to $2.8 billion. Took a lot of work to have a lot of redesign of the project, killing an underground $400 million station that didn't need to be built, some other changes. But there's still more work to do to have more accountability, transparency, and fix some of the problems that are jacking up the cost. It's one of the most expensive projects in the country, $2.8 billion. So I believe it needs to be done. It should be done to Dulles. We've got to keep all the partners on track. The federal government's committed to doing their $900 million, but the rest of it's coming from Virginia and Fairfax and Loudoun and Virginia taxpayers. And I owe them the responsibility of making sure the project is properly managed and that Virginia's interests are properly protected.
How about in a timely fashion? Would your concerns in any way delay the extension project? Can you see a scenario where things would be put on hold because you can't resolve either the project labor agreement or the MWA management problems?
Well, I certainly hope not. I mean, they're saying they're all the right things, but, you know, it's important that Virginia be represented. The president signed a bill, and I expect the two board members from Virginia to be seated. They're not doing that now. If they drag this out for another year or so and don't do it, then we're going to have some problems. Same with the union labor contract and some of the other things in the IG report. If these aren't fixed, I don't think Virginians would expect us to invest in a system that's not that's broken. So I think most of the stakeholders now for Maryland, Virginia, D.C., and the federal government agree that changes need to be made, have been made, but more needs to be done to get this on track so we can put these investments in and have a financially responsible system.
You mentioned tolls and the possibility of increasing tolls there. There's also the possibility of new tolls or increasing tolls elsewhere in the state of Virginia on 95 as people travel, getting ready for summer travel down the beach and whatnot. What can you tell people about that as far as the prospect of tolls on I-95?
There are a lot of ways to build roads. None of them are free. One of those is to use tolls, public-private partnerships to build roads. We've got a couple of those projects going on right now in Hampton Roads up here with the hot lanes and so forth. But I've asked the federal government for the ability to toll on 95. So has the governor of North Carolina, primarily looking at a toll at or near the border of North Carolina and Virginia. And that will all be used, Mark, to fund infrastructure improvements along 95. It's a most busy road that we've got, one of the busiest in all of America. But there's some safety problems, and we want to be able to fix those with those toll revenues, interchange upgrades, widening, different things like that.
How long until those tolls will become a reality?
We've gotten preliminary approval from the federal government.
Because you had preliminary approval for 81, right? And that never happened.
No, we asked it to be transferred from 81 to 95. We've gotten preliminary approval now from the federal government to do that. But we're finding out now it's going to take 18 months to do an environmental impact statement for the toll booths and some other things, more federal bureaucracy that it's going to take in order to get this put in place. So I would say that if we get final approval, we're still talking about a year and a half to 2 years, but it will fund $30 to $60 million a year, which we can either bond or put into some of these spot improvements along the corridor and improve safety on 95.
And you mentioned Hampton Roads, and there is the plan to have a private company build another tunnel down in Hampton Roads.
More than a plan. It's a signed contract. We're moving forward with it. We're not going to make any more excuses about why things can't get done. There's a new toll bridge that is going to be built, a bridge tunnel between Portsmouth and Norfolk. It's the busiest two-lane road, Mark, east of the Mississippi. And people have been talking about it down there for 25 years. I'm tired of talking about it. So we let a private contract, it's about a $2.1 billion deal. The state's put in about $400 million. We just found ways to encourage the Transportation Board to put some of the savings from that contract back into a toll delay until 2014. But that contract's signed. We're moving forward, and we're going to get it done. And we're going to get some other things done in Hampton Roads in Northern Virginia, some of which may involve tolls.
When you have a private company managing tolls, as they will, what control will the state have over how high those tolls? What will the tolls
That's
be?
That's all part of the contract. In the one in Hampton Roads, it is no higher than the Consumer Price Index, or 3.5% a year, which is very much in keeping with these public-private partnerships that are used all over the country to build infrastructure, from the Chicago Skyway to the Indiana Toll Road, any number of projects all over. Tolls are a part of, particularly for a major interstate and other major infrastructure like that. But we expect that to actually be less than what it would cost VDOT to actually maintain a similar project at maybe 4% a year.
And is there any project labor agreement? That's one of the things that nothing for the unions down at the Hampton Roads project.
No requirement that be put in place. No.
Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell is here for the rest of the hour, taking your calls, emails, and tweets. We got a lot of callers waiting. We're going to get to them right after this.
It's Ask the Governor with Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell, live from the Glass Enclosed Nerve Center. Your hosts, Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
And we're taking your phone calls at 877-336-1035 for Governor McDonnell. You can email us at WTOP.com. We're taking questions on our Facebook page as well, and on Twitter using the hashtag AskTheGov.
And let's not wait any longer, because we have a lot of people who've been waiting. We go to Jeff in Herndon. Jeff, you are on with Governor Bob McDonnell. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm a student at Purdue, and I'm graduating in May of 13. I keep hearing all this talk about how great the economy is, but I'm still really scared that I'm going to be able to get a job when I get out. And I was wondering what your opinion was on how the job outlook would look next year in May.
Well, Jeff, I think that's probably the top concern for young people. I just had a daughter graduate from Virginia Tech, got two others at college as well. And when you invest $100,000 or $200,000 in a college degree, that's the biggest concern of people in your generation. By the way, congratulations on your graduation. I can only tell you, in Virginia, the unemployment rate's down to 5.6%. That's down from 7.4%. Just 2 years ago. We're doing better, but it's still an unacceptably high unemployment rate. I do think that young people, particularly that graduate with $20,000, $30,000 of college debt and are either unemployed or underemployed, it works a tremendous hardship. And that's why the top focus for this presidential election cycle is going to be on who can get the private sector revved up and get this abysmal 8% plus unemployment rate down to an acceptable level. I can only tell you that we have made that the focus in Virginia. Just in this last session of the General Assembly, we got about $25 million of new incentives approved, adding to the $100 million of the first couple of years, so that we can create the tax credits, the incentives, the foreign trade offices, the international travel, all the things that are necessary to bring more jobs to Virginia. We're doing better than most states, third lowest east of the Mississippi, but we still got challenges. So we're going to do the best that we can to keep college tuitions low and to improve the economic climate. Jeff, I just say, look, you obviously work hard in college. Keep working hard. Don't take no for an answer. Interview aggressively. Talk to friends. And, after you get that first job, then you prove yourself and you'll have a bright future.
Do you know what the unemployment numbers are for people like Jeff, the teenagers, the people graduating from college? I have to imagine, we just heard in California, the teenage unemployment rate is in the 30% range. What is it?
I haven't seen the cross tabs of that in Virginia. I know overall market's 5.6%, but I can tell you just the national numbers I've seen is significantly higher for young people, both teenagers, but also college graduates, either unemployed or underemployed at this point. These are young folks that have a great education, but maybe not direct job experience. And so that has been a more challenging market. And so I'm pretty confident to say it's higher than 5.6% in Virginia.
Today, you're actually going to sign some legislation. You're over at a ribbon cutting in Northern Virginia, working toward this end of creating more jobs. Tell us a little bit about this legislation you're signing today.
Well, we have a lot of pieces of legislation we're signing.
I know you signed some this morning, but you got some directly tied to encouraging businesses to hire.
Yeah. The there's a series of bills that we've got. There are a couple of them today that we're signing over at the Accentia headquarters, another company booming, by the way, from Maryland to Virginia.
From Montgomery County, no less.
Well,
I think we have Ike from Bethesda on the phone ready to call you about that.
Well, listen, when you're the most business-friendly state in America, so if you're going to ask me about VP every month, I'm going to have to talk about Virginia being the most business-friendly state in America every month. I think that's only fair, don't you think, Mark?
It's fair.
Okay. But we've got several bills that we're signing that create new tax credits to be able to hire new folks, to be able to reduce the burdens on small business with some of the tax and regulations. And so there's a series of those bills today, and over the next months we'll be signing ceremonially that really help people get back to work.
Let's get another call. Let's go to line 7. Lauren is calling from Herndon. Lauren, you're on with the governor. Go ahead.
Hi, Governor McDonald.
Hi, Lauren.
You recently declared May to be Early Intervention Month.
Yes.
And here in Fairfax County, the early intervention program has been drastically underfunded, and Virginia has been in violation of federal law because services are currently being withheld to developmentally delayed children. Do you have any plans to remedy this situation?
Lauren, thank you for your call, and thanks for noticing the proclamation. We declare every May, among other things, to be early intervention month. I can tell you we've invested perhaps the most money incrementally in Virginia history the last couple of years in mental health, mental retardation, developmental disabilities. At my request, we did some restructuring to make sure we get people out of institutions and into community-based services. Last year, I recommended an additional $60 million, and this year, another $30 million as part of a long-term settlement that we entered into with the Department of Justice, and that'll be in the hundreds of millions of dollars over the next 10 years. So I think it is important to be able to create a better quality of life, particularly for young people that have intellectual or developmental disabilities. And Virginia, I believe, is on the right track in that area.
Governor, here we have a Facebook question from Dana along the same lines, wants to know about public school funding. And Dana, wants to know about Virginia lottery money going directly to school funding and how this works and how your funding for schools is proceeding.
Well, since the end of, I think, 97, 98, by law, all lottery proceeds, that is profits, which is about half of the total revenues from the lottery, and the other goes to winnings, that is all dedicated to public education. So that's being done. I can tell you, we this year dedicated about $700 million-plus of new money to K-12 education, restoring a lot of those cuts that were made a couple of years ago. In fact, just in the veto session 2 weeks ago, I recommended another $5 or $6 million for K-12, particularly in third grade reading. That was one of the major achievements, Mark, this session, to make a definitive statement to end social promotion. We want young people to have the gift of literacy at a young age and not do them the ongoing disservice of having them promoted and if they can't read. So we put a lot of money, about $8 to $10 million, into third grade intervention services, and over $700 million, and this is going to help a lot.
Virginia Governor Bob McDonald taking your calls, emails, and tweets on Ask the Governor.
It's Ask the Governor with Virginia Governor Bob McDonald. Back to your hosts, Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
If you have a question for Governor McDonald, call us now at 877-336-1035. Please be patient. Our phone lines are jammed now. 877-336-1035. Email us at WTOP.com, or you can send a tweet. Use the hashtag AskTheGov.
Governor, let me ask you about a move the General Assembly made recently, and that was to reject the judicial nomination of a openly gay man. You issued a statement about this. A lot of people believe that he was rejected because he's gay. Bob Marshall, a delegate who led the opposition to him, questioned his advocacy on behalf of gay rights and whatnot. What is your thought on seeing this judicial rejection?
Well, as you know, election of judges is solely in the province of the General Assembly. The governor only gets involved when there's vacancies. So now I have those, and the General Assembly's not in session. They've been in session for 16 months. They just adjourned, so I haven't been able to appoint any interim judges, but there's a couple vacancies now that I will get to make those appointments, circuit court and appellate level judges. I issued a statement in advance that said that, and this is what I believe, and I've said throughout my whole time, and that is people ought to be appointed to the bench solely on the basis of merit. That means judicial temperament, it means intellect, it means ability to follow the rule of law, and it means their ability to mete out justice with fairness. That's the only criteria. Other issues regarding race, sex, sexual orientation, religion, national origin simply should not be factors. It should be a merit-based process. So, and I said if anybody voted on factors other than that, then I strongly disagree with that vote. So the General Assembly has made its decision. Now the circuit court judges in the city of Richmond will make that appointment, and I will get to make other appointments along the way for circuit court judges.
Do you believe that people made their decision based on his sexual orientation?
I they'll have to speak for themselves. There were 31 people or 33 people that voted against him. They gave their reasons. I can only tell you from my standpoint, it is wrong to vote against somebody on these factors dealing with sexual orientation or other factors that are not based on merit. And so that's my position. And if they did, then I reject that kind of decision making. And I have long been an advocate of judicial selection based on merit.
You know what you said in 2003 about Verbena Askew when you were the chair of the House Judiciary Committee. I'm probably getting the name of the committee wrong,
but
she was up for renomination. She was gay, probably still is gay. She had an issue with a sexual harassment claim. But you were quoted as saying that there is certain homosexual conduct that is a violation of a law. It certainly raises some questions about the qualifications to serve as a judge.
No, I think you've got that out of context, as occasionally
put it in context for us.
Well, what I said was if someone at the time actually there were certain acts that would be a crime, and if those
prior
things,
to 2003 there were anti-sodomy laws,
right? There were laws, and if someone was at a crime, obviously that would call into question their ability to be a judge. But I was very clear in other statements at the time that those factors should not be a element of the decision making. The reason she was not appointed was very well documented. This was a bipartisan vote against Judge Askew. Leading Democrats, Janet Howe, Dick Sasslaw, voted against her. And it was because of documented sexual harassment claims against a court employee, somebody who worked for her, judicial temperament, statements that were made on her judicial questionnaire that members of the committee deemed were not accurate. There were a lot of things, Mark, that led to that decision. This was not a factor. And so I'm disappointed that people would still say that. That was not an accurate assessment then. And if people vote or disqualify somebody on the basis of race, sex, national origin, religion, or other factors that don't have to do with merit, it's wrong. And I've said that throughout my time in office.
So do you think that if somebody was living in Virginia back in 2002 when these laws were still in effect in Virginia and hadn't been overruled by the Supreme Court, that they were breaking the law, then that would disqualify them for serving?
No, Mark, that's 10 years ago. I'm saying
if somebody broken the law 10 years ago.
If somebody violates the law,
right,
then it's going to make it hard for them to be a judge. Wouldn't you agree? So that was my whole point at the time. But that's not what happened in this case. What we were talking about in that case was the elements of temperament, qualification questionnaires, statements and documented sexual harassment. There was actually a settlement with the city of Newport News in that case that was brought to our attention.
$64,000.
Yeah, in this case about what happened. And so there were a series of factors that had nothing to do with race, sex, sexual orientation.
If we put the Askew thing aside and just look to the future, if a judge came before the General Assembly for confirmation now who openly gay and admitted was openly gay in 2002 and having sexual relationships, having anal sex, which was against the law back then, would that disqualify them from serving as a judge now?
It's the law at the time. And so
the law at the time.
Yeah, but look, at this point, Mark, here's what I said, that people should be evaluated solely on the basis of merit. if somebody violates the law, whether it's a sexual harassment claim or whether it's a criminal conviction, yeah, they're probably going to have problems getting appointed to the bench in Virginia. But if they are otherwise qualified to be on the bench based on merit, ability, judicial temperament, then those are the only, and ability to follow the law, regardless of what their political views are. Everybody comes into office, whether it's a legislative office, executive, or judicial office, with their own philosophy. But particularly as a judge, the biggest criteria for me, and I helped to appoint a number of judges throughout my time in office, the biggest ability is to follow the law without regard to their own personal opinions. That's the hallmark of a judge, and that's the biggest thing that I would look for in a candidate.
Virginia Governor Bob McDonald taking your calls on Ask the Governor.
It's Ask the Governor with Virginia Governor Bob McDonald. Live from the Glass and Close Nerve Center, your hosts Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
Your chance to speak to the governor at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Email your question at WTOP.com. You can put a question on our Facebook page as well, or send a tweet. Use the hashtag AskTheGov.
Governor, we just remember Memorial Day this weekend, 3 days of remembering our service members, Virginia, home to many military installations. How did you honor veterans over Memorial Day?
830,000 veterans, most per capita of any state in the country, you know, home of the Pentagon, all our great bases, largest Navy base in the world. We have a 236-year-long love affair with the military in Virginia. I spoke yesterday at the Virginia War Memorial. We had a little over 2,000 people there, and honored in particular the 40 Virginians that have been killed in the global war on terror since last year in Iraq and Afghanistan. Over half of those were those 22 Navy SEALs that died in that helicopter crash last summer. Mark, I can only tell you as a veteran and had a daughter in Iraq, this generation of Americans is incredibly patriotic, and I'm so glad that we're doing what we didn't do after Vietnam, and that is we're thanking these veterans, we're honoring them now, not waiting till the conflicts are over in Iraq or Afghanistan to be able to honor them. I commend the president and what happened yesterday at the Vietnam Memorial to bring even greater attention to those veterans who came home without the benefits and the support and the admiration for their service to the country. And I think it's just critically important. If you want to have your best men and women to enter the military to fight the future wars, you got to be able to honor and appreciate and show support for those veterans of the wars today. That was the admonition of George Washington a couple centuries ago. So I'm delighted to see so many Americans all over the country took time to remember the real significance of this day.
Let me ask you, as we shift gears here, last month, I believe it was, we had the chiefs of police in Prince William and Fairfax counties on here, and the chief of Fairfax County was very clear. Actually, Chief Lehner from D.C. came on after that and said about the same thing, that drones, military technology of drones, which I think most people think about as flying over the mountains of Afghanistan and whatnot, actually may have a function here, a domestic function for either traffic control or police surveillance. And the chief of Fairfax said, yeah, within the next couple of years, you'll see them over the air in Fairfax County. What are your thoughts? You've been a law enforcement official, now the governor of Virginia. What do you think about the domestic use of drones?
I think it's great. I think we ought to be using technology to make law enforcement more productive, cuts down on manpower in the air. And also more safe. That's why we use it on the battlefield, and having it used for a variety of purposes in law enforcement, I think, is a good idea. Now, obviously, at some point, certain operations may need to make sure we address civil liberty concerns along the way with privacy. That's come up with things like cameras at intersections and so forth. But I believe if you're keeping police officers safe and you're making them more productive and you're ultimately saving money, or using them particularly in special weapons operations and so forth, like we did in the battlefield, absolutely the right thing to do.
Is this something Virginia is looking at as a state, the state police, or on the state level? Has this reached your desk yet?
Not my desk, but I know that our state police and our other law enforcement agencies are always looking for ways to use the most current technology to be able to fight crime.
Let me ask you another question along the lines of law enforcement. That was the hunger strike at Red Onion Prison. How can you update us on this? What is the status? Are there still prisoners there who are refusing to eat?
Best of my knowledge, that's over. They ended it after a short period of time. Listen, I think our new director of Department of Corrections, Harold Clark's doing a great job on everything from prisoner reentry and helping us with getting people out and on their feet by front loading the training when people are in the prisons. And Mark, all I can tell you is that there are times where you've got to, for the safety of other inmates and the safety of the guards, and because of the behavior of certain inmates, then there's certain things that have to be done. In the interest of safety, and occasionally things like isolation and segregation and so forth may be part of that. And so we have to make sure that our corrections officers are protected, but we're doing everything we can to make sure that people are safe and rehabilitated in those prisons. But that problem, to the best of my knowledge now, has been resolved.
Are you confident that isolation is not being abused as a tool to discipline prisoners?
I'm confident that our managers in the system are using it only when it's necessary for the proper protection of guards and other inmates.
Let's get a call in. We have Matthew calling from Fairfax County. Matthew, you are on with Governor Bob McDonald. Go ahead.
Now that the session is over and Virginia has a budget, what would you say was the single most important accomplishment of this past legislative session?
Well, I appreciate that. Unfortunately, the budget didn't get as much attention as it should. It's the most important document we pass every year. $85 billion budget that dramatically increased funding for a lot of core services like higher education. We're going to have the lowest increase in tuition mark this year in over a decade. This has been a two-year-long goal to increase investment, but to increase efficiency at our universities. The whole tuitions are going to average about 4% or less this year in Virginia. But one of the most significant, well, overall, balancing that budget without raising taxes and funding core services while still cutting expenses in lower priority areas, that was the overall management accomplishment. Specifically, though, we fixed the retirement system. We had $20 billion of unfunded liabilities. We made the largest investment in retirement system in history. We advanced some reforms to current pensioners, but primarily changed the defined contribution system to a hybrid defined benefit defined contribution system going forward, which will save billions of dollars for Virginia taxpayers. And that's a significant achievement for the future.
Virginia Governor Bob McDonald, when we come back, we'll talk about the race to the White House.
It's Ask the Governor with Virginia Governor Bob McDonald. Back to your hosts, Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
Final minutes with Governor McDonald and your chance to call in at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Or send a tweet. Use the hashtag AskTheGov.
All right, the lightning round, Governor. Let's talk about uranium mining.
Yes.
There's been a three-decade ban on uranium mining, but your administration has been doing some, taking a look at the prospect of uranium mining. What can you tell us about the prospect?
Well,
there?
General Assembly asked me to, after the National Academy of Sciences did a preliminary study, a lot of unanswered questions. They asked me to do a more detailed investigation, specifically about the Coles Farm deposit, $10 billion. My position has been very clear. If we can do it safely, we ought to do it because it'll create a lot of jobs. If we can't, then we shouldn't do it. We just don't have all the answers yet. And so I put together a multidisciplinary team, an open process that'll be looking at this over the next year, and then hopefully get to the point where we can give more information to the General Assembly to make a determination about whether it's safe to be able to do in Virginia.
Some environmental groups have complained that it hasn't been an open process and they don't have a seat at the table.
They're just flat wrong. It's unfair. I've met with them. These people don't want us to even study it. They have already made up their decision, made up their minds, Mark, that they don't even want us to look at it. They don't want us to study it. They don't want to have any mining going on. That's just ridiculous. What I want to do is let's get the facts. I don't have a decision made. They do. Our job at the direction of the General Assembly is to get the facts and to determine, can we mine it safely? We have a nuclear industry in Virginia that creates 40% of our power, and yet 92% of all the uranium comes from outside of the country. Why would we not want to mine uranium if we can do it safely? Now, we don't have all those answers. I have some real legitimate safety concerns and air concerns and water quality concerns. But they're going to be a part of the process. We've met with them. There's going to be four public hearings. They can give us information online 24 hours a day. It is as open as we can possibly make it. But some people have already made up their mind, don't want us to look at it, and that's just wrong.
Let me ask you about beer. You recently signed some legislation.
I don't know anything about that.
I think you know a little something about it. You did go to Notre Dame, didn't you? I'm going to
wow.
hear for that, aren't I?
I wish that we'd have beat the Terps in that final, Mark. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But craft beer and allowing these small craft breweries to actually sell their beer, they want to know when is this going to be expanded to let even more craft breweries operate and sell.
Signed a couple bills already, you know. You may see suds, I see jobs, just like our wine industry, the fifth largest now in America, in Virginia. These all are micro businesses, small businesses where most of the jobs are created anyway. We signed a couple pieces of legislation just 2 weeks ago that'll make it easier for these craft breweries to come up. They've more than doubled in the last 5 years in Virginia, and I think that's a good thing.
All right. I know you come here for one reason and one reason only, and that's to talk
about your question
about your prospects as a vice presidential candidate. Are you being vetted? Have you provided any...
No.
Any documents, tax records, anything to Mr. Romney's campaign
No.
at all? You're going to be meeting with him this week in Virginia for a fundraiser, is that right?
We'll be meeting with his team.
You're not making any appearances with
Honestly, I haven't seen that
there
on the schedule.
There are press reports that you will be,
okay.
that you're going to be making, attending a fundraiser and then having an appearance with him.
I'm actually going to Wisconsin tonight to campaign with Governor Scott Walker because I'm chairman of Republican Governors Association. There may be some new developments. I can confirm that for you independently, but I can't tell you right now.
And if asked, you would serve as vice president?
Are you asking me?
I'm asking you on behalf of...
I'm going to let you and the other rumor mongers continue to discuss that proposition. Look, I have one goal, and that is to... two goals. One, elect more Republican governors nationally because I think they do a better job than are my Democratic counterparts balancing budgets without raising taxes and creating jobs. And secondly, to get Mitt Romney elected. I think this president has been anti-business. I think he's been harmful to our Virginia economy when it comes to creating more energy jobs, piling on regulations and unfunded mandates on the people and the entities in Virginia. That's bad for our state. So I think we need a new president, and that's why I'm supporting Mitt Romney. So that's my goal, and I'll let Mitt Romney decide who he wants to be VP. That's not my call.
How important is Virginia going to be in this presidential race?
I think most people say it's in the top five of the swing states, along with Ohio and Florida and North Carolina and maybe Nevada, Colorado, one of those. I think it's clearly with 13 electoral votes. It's one of the largest states. It's probably in the purple column right now. The president ran a great campaign back in 2008 on hope and change. That message is now recession and division and a campaign of fear. I really don't like the tone that I see coming out of this administration. It's dividing people along class lines, income lines, and others. This is not the message of 2008, and I think it's going to be a spirited campaign about really two issues, jobs and the economy, and this crushing immoral national debt of $15 trillion that this president has jacked up $5 trillion more.
And if Governor Romney asks you, Governor McDonnell, I need you as my vice president, would you run?
I'll let you know when that call comes.
He has not. You have not talked to him about this at all,
no.
to Governor Romney. The idea of even asking you who you
I've
might.
I've only talked to you about it, Mark.
I know you've talked to other people. I'm reading all the quotes. But has he asked you about other shortlist names?
No. Look, we got a great number of guys out there: Christie and Rubio and Jindal. And
are they more qualified than you to be vice president?
Listen. You're asking me to come in on a job that I'm not campaigning for.
I got 35 seconds. I'm going to ask it as many times as I can in as many different ways. Will you finish your term as governor?
Now, that's a good way to ask it. I'm absolutely planning to finish my term as governor. I got 4 years to get a lot of things done. We've got a lot done already. There's a lot more I want to get done.
You're planning, but you're not telling the voters of Virginia you absolutely guarantee that you will be there to fulfill your term.
That's my constitutional obligation. I'm absolutely planning to do it.
And if you're not the vice president and you do finish your term as governor, thought about what's next for you after being governor?
You know, I've been blessed to be in public service and elected office for 22 years. Before that, about another 14 or so in the military and others. My whole life has been in public service since I was an 18-year-old ROTC student in Notre Dame. So, you know, I love doing this. I love giving back to the community. I love trying to make a difference. And so I'll worry about that in a year and a half. You know, I learned as a young lieutenant in the Army, Mark, if you don't keep your eye on the hill you're about to take, there won't be another hill behind that.
We call that filibustering up to the post. Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell, we appreciate
you
coming
Mark.
In every month.